Today is May 24th, 2021, Hillsborough, North Carolina, and this is the anniversary of the passing of Jayananda Prabhu. So we're going to sing the Yayani Loprema Dana.
So Bhagavad Gita Asatara Sadashi Shimadi Devan Grace Sri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Natya Gopi Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Shri Lalidas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shri Gaur Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shaina Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai, Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai, Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, Gaura Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Jinamani. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesis Nivani Vaskutyade Satyam. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Chacham. Sri Rupam Sadvajatam Sagana Raghunatham Bitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Saita Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Bitam Sacham. So today is the anniversary of the lunar calendar of the disappearance of Jayananda Prabhu. So I thought I'd speak a bit about him, and then we'll go on to the Bhagavatam verse 10:25-20. So Jayananda Prabhu, I did not know him personally, so everything I say about him is from what I have read. I mean, I did see him personally at the 76 Rath Yatra in New York, but I was basically an East Coast devotee, and he was West Coast devotee. So, in those days, I wasn't a traveler very much. So Jayananda Prabhu had his bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering, and he came from an upper-middle-class family, but he decided to drive a taxi cab because he said he didn't feel he fit in with the educated upper-class crowd. And he was always looking for something spiritual. When he was in college, he felt that he was just always unhappy in material life. In 1967, he was in the San Francisco area, Bay Area, California. He read an article about Krishna consciousness, and he immediately went to Srila Prabhupada's classes. And he especially liked to go to morning classes because hardly anybody else was there. He was one of the very, very few early devotees who had not been part of the counterculture. So he was not what you could call a hippie. And he very, very quickly decided that he wanted to join the Hare Krishna movement, and Srila Prabhupada had a lot of affection for him. Srila Prabhupada would personally cook for him and serve him. So especially if he was the only one attending a class, Prabhupada would take him and cook, make prasadam just for him and serve him. He often drove Srila Prabhupada around in his taxi, and you can make of this whatever you want, but there's a number of places where Srila Prabhupada praised the fact that Jayananda was chanting Hare Krishna while he was driving his taxi. And several letters, do with that whatever you want. He dedicated his life savings of $5,000. I mean, he was young, so you don't have a whole lot of life savings when you're in your 20s. But he had life savings of $5,000. And he donated that to Srila Prabhupada to print the Bhagavad Gita. And Jayananda's service that he liked to do was he liked to cook. He liked to distribute prasadam. He would distribute prasadam widely to a large variety of people. He would go on the boga run. And he would try to get boga donated. And the people who donated boga, he would pay them back with prasadam. Like every Rath Yatra, he would get free boga for the parade, and then after the festival, he would give everybody a cake. So he also was the Rath Yatra man. He would build the Rath Yatra carts. I mean, nowadays we have the Festival of India, where they rebuild and take down the same carts over and over again. But in those days, they would build them from scratch every year. So he was building the Rath Yatra cart, And again, he was collecting all the boga, he organized the whole festival, and he would engage anybody and everybody in helping with the festival. He was expert at engaging all types of people from all rungs of society. He loved to distribute prasadam, he loved kirtan, and he loved to preach. Physically, he was a very big person. He ate huge quantities of prasadam, and he was very, very strict with his sadhana. He was also very austere. So even he was briefly married, his wife left him because she thought he wasn't Krishna conscious enough. But such is the ways of our mind in this world. But even as a grahasta, he lived very, very simply. He would also take out the trash. He liked to do simple, humble service. And there's a very funny story of a devotee, a man who later became a devotee. And he was visiting the temple, and he started helping Jayananda take out the trash. And he decided, if the garbage collectors at the temple are so blissful, just imagine what everybody else is. And on that basis, it reminds us of the story with Narottama Das Thakur's disciples who pretended to be pot sellers and things like that. So he decided, just imagine how everybody else was. He liked to clean the kitchen regularly. And he never liked to be praised. If anybody praised him, he would just walk away, or he would just negate it. He'd say, yeah, after you've been around for a while, people naturally say nice things about you. He never took praise seriously. And he would never criticize any devotee nor hear criticism of any devotee. He just absolutely refused to hear criticism of any devotee. So he was one of the people who put together the Rath Yatra, the first New York Rath Yatra in 1976, although by that time he was already sick with leukemia. And he ended up, you know, being in the hospital for therapy for his cancer, but he wasn't so interested in taking the material therapy, and he took the thousands that had been collected for his medical care and gave that to Srila Prabhupada for publishing his books. And then, very interesting, you know, he left this world in May of 1977, so he left without seeing Srila Prabhupada pass, and it at least reminds me of Haridas Thakur, who said, I don't want to see your final pastimes. He said, you know, please let me leave the earth before you do. And Srila Prabhupada wrote some letters after the passing of Jayananda that Krishna was very kind upon him, letting him leave his diseased body, that he's gone back to Godhead, and that we should celebrate his disappearance day as we do the disappearance day of any of our great acharyas. So Jayananda really exemplified Kevala Nandakanda, someone who was always joyful in Krishna consciousness, to do the kind of service that he liked to do, the kind of service he had a propensity for, to engage in spreading Krishna consciousness in every way that he could and to anyone that he could. He didn't discriminate higher or lower. So there's a whole book about Jayananda Prabhu, I think written by Vyasati. There's a chapter in Giriraj Swami's book, Many Moons, about Jayananda. You can find on Krishna.com website a much further explanation of Jayananda. So I wanted to go on now to today's verse. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 25, Text. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ataha Bhagavan Gopan Embatata Prajokasaha Yato Pajo Sandishata Yirigartam Sagodana. The cowherds.
Hey.
Oh. Amba. Mother. Tata. O father. Raja O Kasaha. O residents of Raja.
O residents of Raja.
Raj. Yata Upa Josham.
Yata Upa Josham.
As suits your pleasure.
As suits your pleasure.
Vishita. Please enter.
Giri.
This hill.
Gartam.
The empty space below. Sagodanaha.
Together with your cows.
BBT translation. The Lord then addressed the cowherd community. O Mother, O Father, O residents of Raja, if you wish, you may now come under this hill with your cows. BBT purport. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur provides the following insight in this regard. So this is particularly a commentary on the word gartam, the empty space below the hill. Ordinarily, a large cowherd community, which included many thousands of cows, calves, bulls, and so on, could not fit under the base of a medium-sized hill like Sri Govardhan. However, because the hill was in ecstasy, being touched by the hand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it acquired inconceivable power and even felt the hundreds of deadly thunderbolts thrown upon its back by angry Indra to be offerings of soft, fragrant flowers. At times, Sri Govardhana was not even aware that the thunderbolts were striking. From the Hari Vamsa, the Acharya has also quoted Sri Krishna himself as saying, Trilokya ap hutasatehe rakshitam kim punarvajam. Sri Govardhan can give shelter to all the three worlds. Let us speak of the simple land of Raja. That's quite a statement, huh? The whole universe. Govardhan can give shelter to the whole universe. When Indra's attack began and Krishna lifted the hill, the deer, wild hogs, and other animals and birds standing on the hill's flanks climbed up to its peaks, and even they did not experience the slightest distress. So in other words, the forest creatures didn't go under the hill. The forest creatures went on top of the hill, but they didn't have any problems. Okay. Ataha bhagavan gopan himba ta ta vrjo kasha. Yato pajosham shita gili gartam sahodana. The Lord then addressed the coward community. O Mother, O Father, O residents of Raja, if you wish, you may now come under this hill with your cows. I'm going to read the Tika of Jiva Goswami, which Sanatana Goswami has just repeated, so I'm not going to read his. He called to his mother first out of affection, or he called her first to appease her, because she was overcome with worry and sorrow, fearing for her son, thinking that Indra produced showers and anger because of her son. He then called to his father with affection. If his father entered, she would follow. He also called Rohini and others. As you desire, Lupa Joshan, just as you lived in Vraja, you can live here. Harivamsa describes that the area under the mountain measured 2 kroshas, but how could all of Vraja enter the hole? It became huge by the power of his inconceivable energy. And he quotes the same thing quoted in the BBT report about sheltering the three worlds. The hole or cavity refers to the place remaining when he lifted up the hill. The purpose of this area was to give protection from the wind and rain to the cows, which were their wealth, or enter with cows and other wealth. The people then accepted his words. They became happy on hearing his words. The Ananda Vrindavan Champu, of course, describes how the area under Govardhan Hill was this super opulent place. Right? I was just actually listening to Sri Krishna Swami's audiobook reading of Ananda Vrindavan Champu in just this section, right? Where they go under the hill and it's this super, it's not like it's just a bunch of dirt and tree roots and worms and, you know, you pick up a rock and there's all these creatures and not like it was some gross thing like that. You know, it was just this super opulent place. So I want to focus here, and it's related to Jayananda, how Govardhan gets empowered. Now, Govardhan's Krishna, but Govardhan's Krishna in the mood of Krishna's devotee, very much like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna in the mood of his devotee. In fact, Ekalishwar Krishna, and Sarva Bhritya. Everyone else is a servant. So even Krishna's expansions, even Balaram feels that he's a servant. Right? Even Mahavishnu feels that he's a servant. So Govardhan is in this mood of a servant, although he's Krishna. And of course, just like Lord Chaitanya instructed Raghavadas Goswami to worship Govardhan, the Govardhan Shiva he brought him, as Krishna. So some devotees worship Govardhan as Krishna, some devotees worship Govardhan as a devotee. And we know that the great devotee Krishna Priya, and of course, other Krishna priyas also great devotee. little Krishna Priya is also a great devotee, but we're referring to a different Krishna Priya. She had a Govardhan Shila, and one day she looked at the Shila and saw Nandanandana, she saw Krishna there, and she was in ecstasy. But again, we're going to look today at Govardhan in the mood of a devotee, feeling empowered. And several things happen because Govardhan's empowerment. Now, Govardhan's empowerment, as explained by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, was due to his ecstasy. He was so happy that he became empowered. So I always like the example that Arvinda Swarupa Prabhu gave about attractiveness. He says, at a wedding, the bride, even if physically speaking, she's not particularly attractive, because she's so happy on her wedding day, she looks very beautiful. And this is, isn't it a fact when people are happy, they look more beautiful? Right? Like if we're depressed. You know, even a person who has like perfect bone structure and perfect skin and perfect hair, if they're really sad, you know, they don't look very beautiful. But even a person if, you know, their nose is too big and their ears are too small and their eyes are too close together or something, if they're happy, then they look attractive. Yes, happiness empowers us. Happiness also empowers us with energy, isn't it? Right? When we're very happy, don't we have more energy? And as we're going to see here with Govardhan, as mentioned by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, we also, interestingly enough, under certain strong emotional conditions, do not feel pain. This is a widely understood phenomenon. So pain is actually an opinion of the brain. What we call physical pain or even emotional pain is the brain is interpreting particular sensations as dangerous and says, this is supposed to hurt to warn you that you're in danger. It's quite interesting. I've studied a lot of the physiology and psychology of pain. Wish I hadn't had an impetus to do that, but anyway, Hare Krishna. So, we don't feel pain under certain strong emotions. Do you know that a soldier on the battlefield, their leg can get blown off and they don't feel any pain? Because they're under such extreme emotions of fear on the battlefield that their body just shuts off that. It would be, you know, it would just be a distraction. Sometimes when people are very angry, they don't feel pain. And also when people are very happy, they don't. Again, if you can think of us in our life, if we're really happy about something, really, really joyful about it, then other things just don't bother us. Isn't it like that? Eh? It just doesn't bother us. Somebody insulting us, or something not going right, or, you know, we stub our toe. It becomes insignificant because we're so filled with our joy. So this is what Krishna describes, of course, in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter in verse 20, where he says, this is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. And what is the this? To relish and rejoice in the self. Right? Everyone familiar with that verse? To see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self and thus feel boundless transcendental happiness through transcendental senses, this indeed is freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. Krishna never says that the way to get free from all miseries is all of a sudden everybody's going to be nice to you and you're never going to stub your toe and there's never going to be a thunderstorm. You know, many times people think like this. They think, well, if I take up religion, then God's going to act like a big bulldozer in front of me and he's just going to pave my road with gold. Right? He's going to kill all my enemies. He's going to cure all my diseases. Right? And he's going to fill my bank account with millions of dollars. He's going to turn my body into a beautiful one. And everything's going to be so nice. And they think that that's the way that Krishna is going to reciprocate with them. And there's so many religionists who think like this. You know, and when that doesn't happen, then they say, well, at the end of life, I'll go to heaven, so it'll be okay then. You know, this is a short life of misery, and then I'll go to heaven where everything will be nice. Of course, this is a desire for bhakti. which Rupa Goswami says act as a wish and prevents us from actually engaging in pure devotional service. But, you know, many, many people think like that, and when it doesn't work like that, then they become atheists. Like Prabhupada gave the example in Germany in World War II, you know, that the women were praying in those days. The women weren't in the military, so the women were praying in the churches and so forth. You know, dear God, please return my father, my husband, my son, my brother. And when their male relatives became killed in the war, then they became atheists. And we see this even among Hare Krishna devotees. Even among Hare Krishna devotees. I mean, I remember it happened to me when I was in the movement for a couple of years, where we were extremely mistreated by a temple president, and I said, oh, forget this Krishna consciousness. How can Krishna consciousness be real if these kind of things happen to me? You know, thankfully, my husband helped me restore my faith. But this is a very common reaction, right? If things don't go well. And you could certainly say that about this particular lila. I mean, here Krishna is there personally, and he personally tells them, don't worship Indra, instead worship Govardhana. And the result of that was catastrophic. Literally catastrophic. It's not a hyperbole. But we don't find the residents of Vrindavan blaming Krishna. And now Govardhana, again, we're looking at Govardhana in the root of a devotee, he's being inundated with floods also. But he's not blaming Krishna. And then Krishna is putting him, think about this for a minute, Krishna's putting him in a position where he's getting the brunt of this whole storm. So imagine that. Right? First, the Lord tells everyone to worship you, and you're the center of attention, and everybody's worshiping you. And then the result of that is Indra attacks you. And then Krishna says, okay, you take the brunt of the attack and shelter everybody else. But how does Govardhan feel about this? Govardhan feels ecstasy. Wow, I get to serve the devotees. This is Govardhan's whole mood, is serving the devotees. Govardhan's entire mood is to use his body to serve the devotees. Right? The devotees walk on him. Imagine that. We get so upset when people walk on us. Right? We consider it abusive. The devotees walk on him. They get food from his body. They get jewels from his body. They get shelter in the caves of his body. They eat the grass growing out of his body. And now that there's this catastrophic apocalypse, he's using his body to shelter everybody else. Now, does he say, hey, what's going on here? I thought I was the worshipable one. I thought I was exalted to be the worshipful one. Everybody was circumambulating me and feeding me and praising me. And now you're using me as the shield? And all of Indra's anger, the clouds of devastation and lightning is hitting me to save everybody else? What kind of gratitude is that? But he's not. He's in ecstasy. He's in ecstasy when he can serve to have the devotees walk on him. He's in ecstasy when he can serve as the impetus for a festival. And he's in ecstasy when he can be used as a shield. In all these cases, he's in ecstasy. I get to do some service. Jayanand is in ecstasy when he's building the Rathyatra cart, and he's in ecstasy when he's taking out the trash. Who likes to take out the trash? Is that fun, taking out the trash? I mean, even like when I empty the trash in the bathroom, you know, sometimes you have to touch the stuff to get it in the trash can. What do? You know, it's paper towel. You push it down. Sometimes you have to touch it. And get it. What is there in the bathroom? You know. So it's an ecstasy taking out the trash. But Jayananda was in such ecstasy taking out the trash that people joined the Hare Krishna movement by helping him taking out the trash.
Imagine that. By helping you take out the trash, you're like, wow, I want to join this movement. So I can be happy taking out the trash. And he was just as happy pulling Lord Jagannath. So Govardhan is also like this. And what happens when we become like this? We become empowered. How much power do we have as a little jiva? We have a whole lot of power as a little jiva. Anybody here have a whole lot of power? As a little jiva, our power is, it's like a spark, right? Compared to a little spark. What can we do? And especially when we're in these bodies, we really don't have much power. You know, we just trip a little bit and we break something and then we're, you know, disabled for months. Isn't it? Right? Or somehow we get anxiety about something and we have a psychotic break and we go from being a normal person to being a mentally ill person. And we're just so fragile. What power do we have? We struggle to change our own bad habits, isn't it? And what power do we have over other people? One thing you realize as you get older and older is that you have very little power over anybody else. Anybody can ignore you if they want. But we can be empowered. So Govardhan's being empowered here in two ways. First of all, he's being empowered that he can shelter the whole land of Vrindavana, even though by, you know, measuring with a tape measure, by mathematics, that's not possible. He's overcoming the laws of mathematics. You know, you could take all the people who lived in Vrindavan and you can figure out, you know, how much space they would need and measure Govardhan and it doesn't match. So Krishna's really good at this kind of empowerment. Right? You think of some other times when Krishna himself demonstrated this shakti.
Well, from 16,108 palaces every day, he gave 13,054 cows.
Okay, so Dristapu was saying from 16,108 palaces every day, he gave 13,000. Do you remember this exactly?
I think it's 13,054.
13,054.
I mean, how's that possible?
I always wonder why you get that specific number.
Yeah.
But yeah, it gave 13,054 cows from each palace every day. Just the fact that he was separately in each palace every day.
And how he could travel so easily and from one place, you know, to the other in Vrindavan.
Oh, how you travel from one place to another in Vrindavan so easily. Yeah, when we go, it's a day trip. Like if I go to Govardhan to Vrindavan, it's, you know, 45 minutes by auto rickshaw. It's not like I'm just going to go take out the cows and go back and go here. I was thinking also how Krishna expanded himself into Agasura. And I was thinking about the Damodara Lila, where the acharyas point out that Krishna was wearing a belt. Krishna was wearing a belt. And yet Mother Yasoda couldn't put a string around his waist. Even if the string was the same measurement as the belt. You know, at first she was angry about it, and after a while she just started laughing. Like, I'm wearing a belt and I can't put a string around it. So Govardhan just is able to shelter everyone and is able to produce this heavenly abode under him. And, you know, Maharaj often talks about the 17 books in 2 months that he was a part of. That's an empowerment by Krishna. It was taking, what, 4 months to do one book? I think 4 months to do one book, wasn't it?
Something
like that, 4 months to do one book? 2 months to do one book. Okay, so it was taking 2 months to do one book, and then Prabhupada said, in 2 months do 17 books. That's impossible! And Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. And Krishna empowered. Have we all seen that Krishna empowers us? When we become joyful in our service, have we seen that? Even though, you know, I'm thinking, well, I'm not really a devotee, I'm just some fallen person who somehow Prabhupada's allowing to hang around. But still, if I'm joyful in my service, Krishna empowers. He empowers us to do things beyond our capacity and beyond even reason. beyond some material calculation of what is possible. And it happens all the time. The devotees are empowered to do things beyond a material calculation of what is possible. And the other empowerment here is that one doesn't feel distress as distress. There's a number of examples given by Rupa Goswami Bhakti Goswami to Sindhu of this. You know, one cowherd boy who's picking flowers at noon and feels the hot sun is pleasant instead of distressful. But I thought particularly with Govardhan. So this is also from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And it's a verse that I sing almost every day to Govardhan.
Swaprestahasnamujasokumarya Sukhanubhutyartibhumivrite Mahendravajaratimapyajanam Govardhanomidisitamadistam. Beloved's lotus hand with delicate touch gives deepest happiness holding above earth. So Indra's thunderbolt striking he won't feel. Oh, Govardhan, may you grant my request.
So this is what we're reading about today in the Spurport. That Govardhan Hill was so ecstatic that Krishna was touching him. That he just didn't feel that the thunderbolt. Or if he felt it like flowers. Oh, there's something touching me. Lightning! And he's not going to feel lightning. But he didn't feel. His focus was on Krishna's hand. So it's absolutely inevitable that in this body, in this world, we are going to be hit by various levels and kinds of thunderbolts. And if you think you're going to go through life without it, forget about it. It's not going to happen. There's going to be physical diseases, there's going to be mental anxieties, there's going to be mosquitoes, there's going to be centipedes, I had one in my room this morning, there's going to be nasty, mean people, there's going to be nasty, mean people who you thought were not nasty, mean people, and all of a sudden one day you become a nasty, mean person. There's going to be barking dogs, there's going to be crazy governments, there's going to be so many things. There's going to be the body breaking down when you get old, and I know when you're young that doesn't make any sense. We old people seem like a different species. And you just don't think your body's going to break down, but it does. And all these things are going to happen. They really are going to happen, and they're going to happen to all of us. It doesn't matter whether you chant Hare Krishna or not, and eat prasadam or not. It doesn't matter. It's going to happen. But if we're feeling the touch of Krishna's hand, we will not experience these things as miseries. My godbrother, Srinivas Maharaj, used to say, pain is inevitable and suffering is a choice. And I remember he was especially saying at the end when he was dying of cancer, I had a wonderful discussion with him in his last days, and he was still the jolly Swami. You know what I mean? His abdomen was all, you know, blown out with fluids, and the doctor's examining him, and he's just joking around. He says, well, is it going to be a boy or a girl? And I said to him, Mars, is there anything I can do for you? He says, I want to come back and preach. Can I come back as one of your sons? I said, it's too late for that. He said, one of your grandkids? I said, well, if you want to. He said, but make sure that you teach me Hindi and Sanskrit when I'm a kid. So even though he was in a position physically of great pain, he didn't feel the pain as pain. And that is entirely possible. And we don't have to be, you know, oh, well, that's for the pure devotees up there. No. Even a beginning devotee can be empowered in their service. Even a beginning devotee can be so absorbed in the ecstasy of the holy name and so absorbed in serving the deity and so absorbed in their service that they don't feel the difficulties in life as difficulties. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, all these difficulties you give me, I take as great pleasure. So we have like 2 or 3 minutes. Yes, Mr. Kumar.
I really like what you said about Sri Maharaj and not only being not feel pain, from what your description is, but even though he's in a position of pain, he was able to still be give you bliss.
Yes, yes, yes. Jishabhu was saying that Sridhar Maharaj, although physically, technically you could say he was in pain, not only did he not feel his pain, but he could give bliss to other people.
Yeah, so he could still be sweet.
Yes, yes. Yes, Prabhupada.
I just wanted to say that my wife and I were listening to Nirjayananda, and even when he was sleeping, he was doing devotional service, like 24-7. He would be the last to go to sleep, first one to get up. He slept on the doorstep inside the temple. This was on Valencia Street, which was a pretty rugged area. So if anyone came in to harass the devotees, he was there, constantly serving and guarding the temple.
We should have had you give the class.
What?
We should have had you give the class today, since you knew him personally. So Prabhu was saying that he knew Jayananda personally, and that he was doing service even in his sleep, that he would go, be the last one to go to sleep, the first one to wake up, and he'd sleep by the door. The temple was in a rough area. He'd sleep by the door to guard the devotees.
24-7, empowered by Krishna.
Yes, as Prabhu was saying, that he was empowered by Krishna 24-7. That was certainly, all the accounts of Jayananda was like that. He was especially empowered in everything.
And even his leukemia, when he was running, walking down Fifth Avenue, he was in, there was so much pain. His leukemia was really, but he disregarded it.
He disregarded like the pain of the leukemia on Fifth Avenue. Yes. Just giving us all ecstasy in the Rati Yatra. Yes, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhagavatam ki jai, Jayananda Prabhu ki jai.
He was a perfect example of what you were talking about. You won't see pain. He was in ecstasy.
Yes, that was
what
that
was going on.
Yeah, that was why I chose that today.
He wouldn't let Keshavarti tell anybody how bad it was.
Huh.
He just walked out of the hospital.